Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
The evil bitch that is coronavirus may still be raging outside, but Corolla Drinks is hard at work with another month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes a Beard Bro beard shaping tool to tame that unruly corona facial hair, and a Chew face mask so you can silently protest how f***ing stupid all of this is. A 6-foot premium beer bong by beerbong.com so you can slug back a few cold, endless rants when the world officially opens up again. And of course, a bottle of your choice. We know times are tough, but we at Corolla Drinks are here to remind you to take a breath, have a drink, and wait for all this shit to be over. Mahalo.
Well, we get into all the machinations of Kaepernick coming up in this show, and Garagos really breaks down that Atlanta Wendy's shooting and really talks about it from a perspective that really he uniquely possesses, because he's been on both sides of that argument many, many times. So we'll get into that in great detail. First, coming up, Tommy John. Secret to staying sweat-free this summer. Tommy John, summer-ready, ultra-breathable underwear and bras as well. Cool cotton underwear for men and women. It's like having your own air conditioning worked right into your body there, man. Made of beautiful, premium, natural Pima cotton. Stuff is good. Enhanced airflow, evaporates sweat even faster. Lounge pants, lazy day joggers, soft, ready tees and polos. Upgrade to Tommy John today. Get enhanced, super breathable designs. The stuff is the best. I'm wearing mine right now. I'm wearing the t-shirt and the underpants right now. I'll wear them, get a sweat going, and then just walk around the house. They just dry while you're wearing them. You couldn't say that about any other brand. It's the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free. Guaranteed it's the best. Tommy John, right, Gary?
For a limited time, go to TommyJohn.com/Adam to get 20% off site-wide. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off site-wide. TommyJohn.com/Adam, see site for details.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt, with your hosts, Mark Garagos and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. A choice, big on mandate. Get it on, and welcome to the best hour in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Mark Garagos coming from his office today. How are you, Mark?
I'm very good. And I, you know, here I thought, for those who didn't see or hear what we were doing before, I thought you got all dressed up for me. I mean, you're dolled up here today.
I put a little powder on. I put a little gel in my hair. I put a shirt with buttons on it because they're doing a 5-part Showtime retrospective of The Comedy Store, which is a good subject to do a retrospective on. And, right. And I've just became a regular at the Comedy Store after all these years, so they wanted to include me in the cast of comedians they interviewed. I should also tell...
Who else is...
Yes.
Okay, who else is a regular?
I don't know all the guys. Guys like Mark Maron and Joe Rogan and guys like that, possibly, right. Chris D'Elia, famously.
D'Elia, right. Callen.
Brian Callen. Yeah, there's a lot. There's names you've heard of and names you haven't heard of. Remind me, we just recut the K-Rock doc sizzle reel in a very interesting way.
Yes.
So Gary, tell Nate to send that out to Mark, because I think you're going to really enjoy this 2.0 version of this.
I really want to see it. I really want to see it bad. While you were getting all dolled up, I was sitting here doing a little research, and I come up empty for our fans. I can't find out a legal basis for Gavin Newsom, our new California dictator, who apparently now is not just governor, but usurps the legislature and makes laws. Like you saw yesterday that now he has declared that masks shall be worn throughout the state. And I didn't, and otherwise there will be penalties and fines or whatever else. I didn't realize the governor could just make laws. It's a new constitutional prescription. I went and looked at the Constitution, couldn't find it there. Went and saw the statutes, didn't see it there. Maybe you know, as an ex-prosecutor. Did you know the governor can just make laws and tell people they've got to wear masks, subject to criminal prosecution?
I just had this conversation with Mike August, because I keep saying, what is going on? So I came back from Houston a month ago. I did a bunch of shows. Everything was fine. Flew Southwest, no problemo. Ate out at restaurants. Got a massage. Got a whole nine yards. Hotel, Southwest, clubs.
Steak. Chilled martini up.
Chilled martini up. Everything. Came home. Then 3 weeks later, last weekend, I went out to Nashville. Exact same thing. Club, drinks, restaurants, food, two shows a night, hotel, rental car, Uber, Southwest flight, LAX, Nashville, layover in Phoenix for an hour. By the way, the rules, which I love, and here's how you know they're arbitrary. We go into the Phoenix airport. We have an hour layover before we fly LA to Phoenix, Phoenix to Nashville. We're in there. So it's okay. Let's get a drink. So we go into the bar, restaurant bar, and we get a drink. And we say, okay, we're just going to sit down in the restaurant and have our drink until our flight comes. And they go, no drinking in the restaurant, no staying in the restaurant, no standing at the bar. I said, well, where do we go? Go drink in the airport. I said, go out and just drink it. Just go to the Southwest Lounge with your booze and have a drink. I said, wait a minute. 3 weeks ago, I would have been tackled and arrested if I tried to walk out of here with my drink. No, you can't drink at the bar. Go out, go in the airport and drink. And I'm like, okay, but why was it illegal for me to do this behavior prior to this date? Which just lets you know there are no real rules. And they're arbitrary rules. There's no real danger.
Right. And I don't understand. What are we talking about? How do you just say, I'm going to do face masks, blah, blah, blah. The Orange County public health woman apparently got death threats and resigned. Orange County sheriff, I believe, is now saying he's not going to enforce this. I don't even know what there is to enforce. I looked last night. They do an email blast that all of a sudden masks are required. I say, okay, fine. I want to see what it is. I go on. There's a public health, California public health bulletin. There's absolutely no information that would tell you what the enforcement mechanism is. There is probably the biggest loophole I've ever seen. You can't go outside without a mask if you're unable to stay more than 6 feet away from somebody else. So what does that mean? Oh, I left my house. My intent is never to get closer to than 6 feet to somebody. There you go. So now I don't have to wear a mask.
Right.
I mean, what are we talking about? It's so simplistically idiotic that, and people are just like, yeah, you got to wear a mask. You got to wear a mask. Like a bobblehead.
Well, I know. And what I was going to say was, so I got booked to go do a corporate thing for Snap-on Tools, who are in Wisconsin, right? And I said, okay, so that's on a Thursday afternoon. So I said to Mike August, well, if I'm going to be in Wisconsin, throw a couple dates up at the local comedy club, and I'll do some dates because I'm already there. I'll hang out and do a show Thursday night, Friday night. Mike's been on the phone for, Mike, the idea of leaving a nickel on the table for Mike is unthinkable. Of course, he wants to put dates on. He's called every comedy club, every brewery, every church and synagogue. They can't have more than 10 people gather in one place in Wisconsin. I said, well, we just got back from Nashville. The club was packed. He said, yeah, that's Nashville. I said, well, is there a different strain of this virus that's going on in Wisconsin than there is at Nashville or Houston or L.A. or Orange County to L.A. or Ventura County? What's different about L.A. versus Ventura County? What is going on? It's either killing people or it's not.
I just had an argument this week, I believe. I hope I'm not conflating two arguments, where on a temporary restraining order, and the argument was, well, you can open up, but you can't have you can't have meetings, you can't have conference rooms or anything else. And they said, well, what about the protests? And they said, well, you know, that's irrelevant. And I said, well, what if I host a protest? What if I have a protest and I host it? And to which the opposing counsel says, Your Honor, we didn't brief that. I said, well, what do you have to brief? I'm here on a restraining order. You just told me protests are okay. I looked out my window down Hollywood Boulevard. I saw 20,000 people packed in. That's okay. But I can't have 250 people for a wedding. What if I have a wedding of two people who met during the protest and they're all going to protest at me? I don't understand. I don't understand these rules and the slicing and the dicing.
Well, look, obviously it doesn't pose the threat that they claimed it did. Otherwise, the protests wouldn't be legal or we'd start seeing a body count. What I'm saying is I've always said this. Imagine this was a movie. It was a movie about a killer pandemic that was devastating the population. How would it work? You think you'd have protests with hundreds of thousands of people all over the nation taken to the streets and then they all just go home, have a Gatorade and call it a night? You think that would work in a movie format? Where's the death toll? Where's the carnage?
By the way, we took over the place where I was born. I believe that Dr. Shang took over St. Vincent's Hospital as overflow for Corona. Do you remember this downtown LA? I haven't heard anything about utilizing it for Corona overflow. In fact, all I've heard about recently are hospitals going out of business or shutting down because they don't have enough business because nobody wants to go to a hospital in order to get Corona. And I'm trying to still figure out why it is while we're opening up, we're now saying that you've got to wear masks, even though nobody is instructed on how to wear a mask. And I just saw a picture of his honor, the governor, wearing a mask, but the mask was below his nose. So that's how we wear the mask? It has become such theater. It's such absolute, it would be comedy if it wasn't so ridiculous. Whatever happened to, we're just going to flatten the curve until so that we don't get overloaded at the hospitals. Remember that?
Yes.
Whole rationale? Remember
yes.
way back when, 6 weeks ago? Now it's, we're going to cure it, and we're going to do masks, and we don't know whether or not masks work, by the way. And then we've got Dr. Fauci talking about the NFL. Then we got Trump tweeting that Dr. Fauci doesn't know anything about the NFL. I mean, this is such a comedy of kind of a perverse comedy, but it's really not all that funny. You know what I mean?
I agree. Well, let's move on to more serious, unfunny subjects like the Atlanta Wendy's shooting, because, of course, I'm watching the breakdown. And again, every time I hear a lawyer get up and speak, or a DA or prosecutor, I then turn to you. I say, what would Mark think? What would Mark say about this analysis? This case is not knee on the neck. This one has a lot more nuance and moving parts to it than a simple bad, cop shooting or bad knee on the neck situation. I know you lean more toward the victim than the cops, and that's fine. What is your take on this case, what the DA is going for? I hear, as we talked about in previous episodes, I feel like when the DAs get over their skis a little bit and they ask for more than they're going to get, they're setting themselves up for disappointment and possible unrest. But what do you think about this case?
Let me tell you what's fascinating about this. I'm somebody who both sues cops for basically it's most of my personal civil practice is violations of the 1983 excessive force lawsuits, and I do criminal defense. And as you know from talking with me over the years, I also want to hold prosecutors' feet to the fire. First of all, let me make a couple of comments. This prosecutor who is out there is now doing the circuit, the TV circuit, and he's discussing evidence. He's discussing what the other officer, there's two officers, one guy is supposedly saying, he's saying that guy is cooperating. He's going on the TV shows and saying all that. That would be fine if you're a defense lawyer who has to zealously defend your client. That is not under any prosecutorial ethics that I've ever seen, something that is ethical for a prosecutor to do, number one. Number two, there is no, the defense lawyer's got a safe haven after Gentile where you can respond to a prosecutor who's out there trying to slam your client. Now, put that aside for a second. They are now filing criminal murder charges against this cop. Prior to now, would I have sued this cop for excessive force? Absolutely. Would I have lost civilly? If I'm suing for damages, would I have lost in a civil court amongst, I would say 99 out of 100 federal judges would have dismissed this case when I'm suing on behalf of the family? Yeah, understand that for a second. Not the criminal case, not charging this guy, not indicting him for murder, not filing it, but just suing. There, 99 out of 100 judges a year ago would have granted what's called either a 12B6, which is a motion to dismiss in federal court, or would have granted summary judgment based on that video and said the officer had qualified immunity. They would have said, when you wrestle with an officer, when you resist, when you pull the taser gun out, when you aim the taser at the officer, even if you're shot in the back while fleeing from that officer, 99 out of 100 judges would have, federal district court judges would have granted a qualified immunity argument brought by the city attorney for whatever cop, and have said, judge, there's no case that allows somebody to wrestle with the officers, punch the officers, grab his taser gun, run away, and expect not to have force used against them because he's a fleeing felon, whatever. That's what's so infuriating about this, is that not only have I been fighting this fight for 35 years of trying to get civil liability, but the idea of criminal liability attached to this. And you're going to see, unfortunately, my prediction, depending on what jury instructions you're going to get, if you get an acquittal in the criminal case, people are going to say the system is broken, blah, 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 blah. No, the system is set up for cops, by cops, and not for citizens. So this is the criminal defense lawyer in me says, I understand you want to charge murder, but remember, this is not Minneapolis. This is not what I consider in Minneapolis a righteous second degree, if not a first degree murder. This is a case that is a setup for an acquittal.
What should they be going for? Should they be going for lesser charges?
Yeah, I would. I mean, there's a manslaughter. There's an excessive force. You don't have a right, basically, to shoot. You know, I mean, you know, there's the whole doctrine of fleeing felon. I talked to you, I tried a case here in California a couple of years ago where a transvestite on Hollywood Boulevard had slashed one of the group of kids. I told you about this case. Gloria Allred represented the complaining witness in that case, even though I said it was complaining witness was ridiculous because that person should have been charged with a crime for using a box cutter and slashing the kid. Mm-hmm. We argued for fleeing felon, that the three kids who weren't slashed, who had followed and pushed the person down who had a weapon, that should have been a civilian doesn't even get that. You generally, the DA's office argued against that. So in this case, you used an excess of excessive force, but that would normally be a manslaughter, not a murder. And the problem is when you overcharge and you have, I could get into all the lesser included arguments and everything else, but the problem is you set yourself up for failure as a prosecutor. I mean, it's the old expression, you're taking the short money. You're quelling civil unrest now, but you're kind of kicking the can down the road and setting yourself up for failure later on.
You know, the part about all these stories, or not all these stories, but certainly in this particular one, is when you listen to all the politicians and pundits weighing in, it's so irresponsible when you hear Stacey Abrams saying, man is sleeping in his car to Wendy's and the cops come up and murder him. It's like, boy, sweetheart, there's not enough buildings burning for you right now. This is how you're going to couch this incident with a guy and this sort of notion of like, why didn't they just let him drive home? Or why didn't they, that's not how DUI arrests work. You don't.
Well, it's the law of unintended consequence. I've said for years this idea. I can't tell you how many times I've defended somebody who was asleep in their car. Famously, how many I've had where they're asleep in their car at a stoplight. You know what I mean? He just passes out in the stoplight. He's asleep. He's dead to the world. And then the cops come. They wake him up and they arrest him and take him in. In this case, obviously, the cops could have handled this a thousand times more differently. But at the same time, what the cops will argue and what they're saying is, and I'm the last guy to defend the cops, as you well know, but the idea that somehow you can resist. There wasn't excessive force at the time of the resistance, which is the law. The law is, when do you use excessive force? I've tried the case. I mean, specifically down in Hawthorne, where they used too much force at the time of the arrest. Then you can get an instruction that says, that focuses on that. You can use, if, for instance, if somebody uses too much force on me when they arrest, I've got a right at that slice of period of time. I don't have, if they turn me around in a DUI arrest, the right under the law to punch the officer at that point. Does the officer have the right when somebody is fleeing to shoot him in the back? No. But when somebody turns around, and this is what is going to be argued, so you can disagree all you want, but this is the law. When somebody turns around with a taser and fires the taser, you're going to have the prosecution and the defense. I'm going to tell you right now, they're going to argue whether or not that's deadly force on the part of the person who's fleeing by shooting the taser, and whether the officer can respond in kind to shoot. So you have to get, it reminds me of when we used to have the Michael Brown, Eric Garner discussions. I always took the position, I never understood Eric Garner and why those cops weren't filed on, because he's selling loose cigarettes. You tackle him to the ground on an infraction, makes absolutely no sense. Michael Brown, on the other hand, there was a lot more facts, but they tended to get lumped all together and nobody was making legal distinctions. And that's what I'm arguing about. If you're going to charge people with crimes, you've got to be able to make legal distinctions as to what the law will say when you get into a courtroom and you ask a judge to give you jury instructions.
Well, from the cheap seats, I would say, and I had Gary look into this, because I have been tased by a taser, and it was in Hawthorne. I tried out for the Hawthorne.
Was it really?
I tried out for the Hawthorne SWAT team doing a man show bit a million years ago, and it's the same kind of
taser. I can't believe it was in Hawthorne. That's the same police department, if I'm not mistaken, who, Gary, you can look it up, Leon Rosby. They got that video where the Hawthorne PD shot killed my client's dog for filming them prior to any thing else. Gary will find it. And Hawthorne PD did the same thing. And they know how to use a taser. Damn, Adam, if I had known this, I wouldn't have hung part of those counts. I would have won the entire case outright. I ended up having to get the judge to dismiss.
So I've been hooked up to a taser, a real cop taser. Now, to be fair, they didn't shoot it at me. They hooked it up to me. They hooked it up to my feet. And then they tased me. Yeah, I knew it was coming, but I still felt all the voltage go through me. You want to play it, Gary? Sorry, I signed up for it.
This is an M26 air taser. Mm-hmm. It's one of our less than lethal options. It's an electrical stun gun.
Mm-hmm.
It shoots out 50,000 volts at 26 watts of electricity.
Right. This is what we shoot the guys that are hopped up on PCP with?
Exactly.
All right.
What's going to happen now is I'm going to turn this on, and I'm going to give you probably a 1 to 2 second volt of electricity. Adam, what I'd like you to do is focus and try to take a step towards me.
Oh, all right. That sucked. This being a criminal sucks. I like shooting people much better.
Oh, that's me. Oh, let me fire that gun for
wait,
a second.
Let me see the gun fire.
Gary will figure it out.
I not know about this? Gary, how did you let me try Leon Rosby's case without that? I would have gotten that as an exhibit. Had Adam testify that they knew what non-lethal was.
So what I wanted to know when I heard about this is how many times can you fire one of those tasers? Now, I thought it was once. Gary told me twice.
So there, let me clarify a little bit. There are a lion's share of tasers can be shot one time and need to be reloaded. Right. There are two other models, one where you can fire it twice, one where you can fire it three times. Per the DA, in this particular instance, they were using a model that can be fired twice. And per the DA's statement, when the victim was shot, the taser that he was holding had already been fired twice and was thus defunct. However, she is clearly spinning whatever she's spinning, and it's unclear when that was fired, whether it was fired once in the struggle, whether it was fired once by the eventual victim. It's unclear, but at the time of
Yeah.
Gary, you've got the video, right?
I can pull the video up if need be.
Pull the video up because I'm pretty sure you can see the flash of the taser being shot.
You're right. It is. But here's the argument. If I'm the defense attorney, I'm going to say, first things first, he pulled the taser out of one guy's hands. He then bonked the other guy in the head with the butt of the taser. And all the confusion, these guys didn't know if this thing was fired once or fired twice. All they knew in the heat of battle is this guy turned and fired it. Now, maybe there was a second shot in it, or maybe there wasn't a second shot in it. You're asking that guy to do that math literally in a full sprint after he just got his ass kicked. And if he gets tased, this guy's already proven that he will put his hands on you, and he already bonked one guy in the head with it.
The officer.
So if this guy gets tased and this guy's out of commission.
Yeah, but see right there. There's, you can see it.
Right.
You can see the taser going off, and that's exactly what's going to happen in the trial of this case. Right there, as Gary's frozen it, they're going to have a use of force expert that's going to say when that happened, basically, to quote Oliver Wendell Holmes, I think it was, the law does not require detached reflection in the face of an uplifted taser, paraphrasing.
Right.
And that's going to be the defense argument that when they shoot the taser, and then the prosecutor is going to argue, well, no, that's not deadly force by the taser, or by the victim shooting the taser. All of this, and I've seen other criminal defense lawyers who I respect say the same thing. Two years ago, not only would you never have gotten a criminal filing in this case, 2 years ago, you couldn't get a federal judge to get you past motion for summary judgment in a civil case if you were suing on behalf of the family.
Well, the problem is you can argue that the taser is non-lethal, although there's a tape of the same prosecutor, or DA, explaining that tasers were lethal force from 2 weeks earlier. So that's going to be a tough putt, because you literally have the same guy on camera explaining that it's lethal. So it's going to be tough to argue the non-lethal. But even if you argue the non-lethal, if that guy goes down and bonks his head, it can be lethal. Or if that guy goes down and you grab his gun away from him and shoot his partner, then it can be legal. And the problem is you already demonstrated an ability to put your hands on these guys, wrestle them to the ground. pull the taser out and bonk the guy in the head with it. There's no reason for them. Now, you can say they knew he didn't have a weapon, and they knew he was of a calm demeanor when he got out of the car, and they had a 26-minute conversation, and they patted him down, and they knew that he wasn't packing heat. Right. But 8 seconds ago, he kicked both their asses and bonked them on the head with the taser. That's the latest information they knew. So you're going to have a hard time selling that. I think they're going to have a very hard time selling that.
I'm just telling you, absent some jury instruction I haven't seen, I don't know that any jury, how any jury is going to find, given how skewed jury instructions are in this area of the law, how anybody's ever going to find him guilty. I don't see how it happens.
And Gary, was there a second shot left in that taser or not? Because if there was a second shot left in that taser, then it's kind of a done deal. You turned around, you fired once.
Based on the statements from the DA, it would appear that when they pulled the trigger, which would have been moments after the portion I just freezed in that video, that at that point it was inoperable, and that was the second shot that he had
where
fired.
Was the first shot?
It doesn't clarify, but I'll,
because we should be able to see the first, or maybe it was on the ground.
It could have been discharged.
I thought it was on the ground.
Yeah,
I think,
struggle.
Gary, if you go back, you can see in the struggle where it looks like there's one shot there, is kind of my memory. But you're going to see this. I mean, part of, let me give you a coming attraction of what this is going to look like. There's going to be a frame-by-frame analysis by their hired mercenary expert.
Right.
Let's see if you can see right there. Boom. And there, the expert will probably say right there when he got up was when the first.
Here's my point. Here's my point. They're going to make the argument that in the heat of battle, like the great Clint Eastwood in Dirty Harry, you know, did I fire five shots or six shots? You know, they're going to say in the heat of battle, you can't keep track. And they're going to make some argument that they have a three-shot taser that they were going to implement in a month. And this guy was confused as to whether he had the new R16 or the R15 model. Like, they're going to do some of that too, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, those guys. I don't know. A lot of judges normally would not allow a lot of that stuff in. So, you know, unless the cop gets a stand, and my guess is that he will. But one of the ways that he might not is if they call an expert and the expert is able to get in some kind of hearsay that the cop gave him. But normally the cop will take the stand. The cop will testify that he was in fear for his life. And that gives him the self-defense argument. And the self-defense argument is going to be that you can't say beyond a reasonable doubt that the cop didn't fear for his life. And therefore, he was using the appropriate amount of force.
I'm going to tease whatever new Kaepernick news I've heard about, possibly going to San Diego, getting a tryout with the San Diego. So tell us whatever you know about that. First, I'll tell you about verdict with Ted Cruz 2020. Wow. Impeachment, coronavirus, race riots. Who knows what's next? Well, no better time to get to the source. Senator Ted Cruz and Michael Knowles got back together in D.C. for the first time in months. The verdict, I should say verdict, not the verdict, just verdict with Ted Cruz, topped the podcast charts earlier this year with their inside look into impeachment hearings. And now they're back as 2020 gets crazier. Go behind the scenes in Washington, see what's really happening. See if he's going to fight a Hollywood celebrity or not. It's all out there. Check out Verdict with Ted Cruz. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Again, that's Verdict with Ted Cruz. Subscribe today. Oh, it's Los Angeles, not San Diego. Oh, sorry, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Chargers.
Yeah. Sorry. Was that Gary? That's Gary.
Yeah.
He's a huge Charger fan, isn't he?
Sorry.
What do you think, Gary? You think Kaepernick on the Chargers makes sense?
I think that Kaepernick on a lot of teams makes sense. On the Chargers, I think he fits in their system, but they've got a pretty full QB room as it stands. So I don't know. they're going to have to shuffle some stuff up with the guys they already have under contract before I think it's that appealing.
Who do they have that's better than him?
Well, that's a maybe no one.
Who do they have? I saw somebody on ESPN do a fairly detailed analysis of the, you know, there always is this kind of the knock on the Cap and his last year, but somebody did a fairly detailed analysis on ESPN that I saw on Twitter and watched, and it was fairly, I thought, convincing that his last year was that he did a pretty credible, if not top five, job in the last 16 games that he played.
So what do we think? I mean, obviously, it's a whole new world. I guess he's gone from, I guess would be from liability to, trying to think of, well, whatever the opposite of liability is. I mean, he's gone
an asset,
right. He's gone from a liability emotionally. And
PR liability to a PR asset, I would say. And just FYI, yeah. Ace, we're waiting for him to join back on, but we lost Mark there for a moment.
Right.
Oh, there he is.
Sorry. So, Mark.
So, I'm back. That was the NFL. They've got a they've got a special device that whenever I talk about Kaepernick, they automatically nail me.
So, he's gone from this liability from a PR standpoint to an asset from a PR standpoint. Now, the ability, you know, the physical ability, the ability to perform his job, to function as a quarterback, that has never changed. And people can argue, is he good enough? I think even the most ardent, most ardent critics, I should say, of Kaepernick still would have to admit that he could play backup on a team that was under 500 last year, even if you had, Trump would have to have admitted that, you know, a year and a half ago, right? So
right, and there are the people who know, and mind you, I don't pretend for a second, I'm not Dave, and I'm not you. I do follow to some degree. I mean, and I talk to people who know. I surround myself with people who know. There's no question amongst the people who know that he could start on at least 10 teams in the NFL now. And that's why people don't know.
For me, the threshold is being in the NFL. So I'm not even going to raise the threshold to starting. I'm going to just have the threshold of make the squad, make the roster, because that's really what we're talking about, Cap being in the NFL. So if we've lowered the bar to literally just making the roster on any NFL team, now we can all agree that that's possible. I mean, that he has ability to do. And then now we're talking about, is he an asset or is he a liability? And he went from liability to asset, you know, over the course of a weekend, essentially. So with those two things in mind, he's now going to be on a team in my mind. My question is what team? And are there tryouts going on? Is there going to be another sort of group tryout as he did a few months back?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm speculating, and you know, Jeff Nally is his agent, and is one of the premier agents. But one of the things that I have made the argument for, going on now almost 18 months, is the idea that he was a liability. I always thought was bullshit. I thought that and Nike put that to bed about 18 months ago, maybe longer, with the campaign where it showed. I think any team, and the problem is, I've been in the room with these owners doing their depositions. I've been in the room with Goodell doing his deposition. And I will tell you that at the time, I could not believe generally just how out of touch and I hate to use the term clueless, but it made no sense to me why somebody did not sign him back then. This idea that somehow he was a liability struck me as idiocy, because I've been on the street with Colin. in New York. And I've been on the street with Mike Tyson. I've been on the street with Michael Jackson. I've been on the street with Chris Brown, meaning I've walked, you know, for a couple of blocks with guys who are readily recognizable. I've never, ever seen anything like walking the street with Colin. I mean, you cannot do it. I mean, it's almost an impossibility because people, their affinity for him, their love for him, the kind of the iconic status that he has had, not just recently, but for years, is off the charts. And I've never understood some owner. You could, and I don't know the ins and outs of the NFL in terms of their merchandising agreements, but the merchandise that would fly off the shelf if you had him for your particular team, the number of tickets you would sell to your team. I mean, Gary, you're a huge Charger fan, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Him on the Chargers to me is such a no-brainer. I mean, you've got a team that is a far second in the LA market. You've got a team that couldn't get any traction in the LA market. Gary, where were they playing? They were playing at that arena
soccer field.
Formerly StubHub Field that was renamed like Heritage Health or something. But here's a good test, Mark, that I think will illustrate your point. Adam Carolla, huge NFL fan. Can you tell me who the quarterback of the LA Chargers is at the moment?
Stan Humphries.
That is a former LA Charger quarterback. But no, the current starting quarterback starting quarterback is Tyrod Taylor.
Wow. That is, what years did Stan Humphries, was he the quarterback? Or Dan Fouts is my second guess.
Dan Fouts with Kellen Winslow.
Right. But I went Stan Humphries because it was a deeper cut. I knew Gary would laugh harder. Stan played from...
I'm pulling it up now. He was on the Chargers from 92 to 97.
There you go.
And Kalen's going to give you Fouts.
Fouts is probably 78, 77? No, earlier?
On Wikipedia, it says 73 to 87.
Wow, 73 to 87. Wow. He was a quarterback on that team for a long time. You got to understand, he was quarterback on that team from the time I was 9 years old to the time I was like working construction in LA in my 20s. You know what a block of a young man's life that is, from literally being in the third grade to, you know, drinking beers with guys in a pickup truck on a Friday after swinging a hammer all day. I mean, that's a long period of a guy's life.
And Dan Fouts was quite a quarterback. What was the coach's name? Don Coryell?
Don Coryell. Air Coryell. Yeah.
So my point there with the Tyrod Taylor thing is that Tyrod Taylor, while a very good quarterback, has been largely regarded as a backup. The Chargers know that when they drafted a quarterback this year in Justin Herbert, but he's probably got some time to go. So it would make perfect sense for Cap, assuming that he is at the level of play that he was last time we saw him, could come in and, if not start outright, fight hard for that job. And it would be an added wrinkle that would make it super appealing is the Chargers are on Hard Knocks this year.
Oh, God. Big. And, so, Mark, what I wanted to say about you and the owners and Cap and the league, you know, a couple of years ago, it's frustrating when you know you're saying, you know, we're saying, well, now he's an asset. Before, he was a liability. But you knew he would be an asset before. It's just you couldn't convince them. And it always kind of reminds
me.
It reminds me.
What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I used to get in arguments with my program director at K-Rock all the time, Kevin Weatherly, because I was frequently asked to do Tim Conway's show as a guest on my way in to do Loveline at night. And I would swing by KLSX and I would be a guest on their show. And then at some point I'd go, I got to go, fellas. I got to go do Loveline. And they'd go, yeah, we always listen to Loveline, big fans, you know. And then my program director would get mad at me because he'd say, why are you doing these other people's radio show? And I'd say, you should be thanking me because I am promoting your station on the competition. I'm saying I'm going to go do Loveline on K-Rock. I got to go. And we're getting everyone to switch over to K-Rock.
Exactly.
And so you, So it, to me, it kind of has some of the same notes, which is you think this thing is a liability, but you don't get it. It's an asset. And I agree that would have been that way 2 years ago.
It would have been. And it's so incredibly frustrating that you would see people who are hugely successful by the measure of dollars or wealth and who are in a business where ostensibly they're saying that he would be bad for business. And you know, you just know beyond any shadow of a doubt, they're dead wrong. They're just absolutely dead wrong. And to see it unfold kind of slowly, like a slow motion car wreck, is so frustrating. It's just so, you want to take somebody and shake them and say, how do you miss this? How do you not understand what you're missing? And in the Chargers, thing, here you've not only got somebody who, can you imagine Colin in Los Angeles? I mean, it would probably, the closest thing I can think of is when the Raiders came to LA. It would have that kind of a buzz. It would have that kind of a cult following. It would instantly give the Chargers the street swagger in LA and across the league that they want. And by the way, if I own the Chargers, don't I want the value of my franchise to double? Why am I going to play second fiddle to the Rams in their SoFi Stadium? None of it makes any sense to me. It's like I want to just take somebody and shake them and say, dude, you got $1 billion staring in front of or standing in front of you. Do the right thing. It's not going to cost you that much.
How fast would Cube chuck his Raiders hat and pick up a Chargers hat?
I think, when you talk about the idea that Cube, and imagine that, Cube would say, no longer a Raider, now I'm Team Charger, and you know he is a business partner, I count him as a friend. I'm not saying that he's told me that, but I think it's fairly predictable that he would be instantly intrigued by that.
Cube, right? Well, somebody would have to take that ball cap, do a half Raiders, half Chargers cap, and everyone, whoever bought an NWA album, would just go out and immediately buy that ball cap. So Supreme Court had a decision very recently. I don't know all the nuts and the bolts of it. What do you know about that ruling?
Let me give you two. There's been two Supreme Court rulings within the last 10 days. The first one was on whether or not the Civil Rights Act covered LGBTQ, which in a 6-3 decision written by Justice Gorsuch said that it does. And he used a very simple, what I consider to be a simple common sense statutory argument. He said, if you tell somebody that I'm playing on a softball team, and it's a gay softball team, and then you discriminate against that person, that they're covered by the Civil Rights Act. And he said, why is that? Well, because if you said, I'm going to play on a heterosexual team, meaning I'm a guy, and I'm attracted to a female, her sex, and that's okay. Yet if I say I'm going to play on a team where it's homosexual and I'm attracted to a guy, you're discriminating on sex. Gorsuch says that's held, that's a violation of the statute, it's covered. The second one, and part of that decision was 6-3. So here you've got one of Trump's appointees, Gorsuch, voting for in the block and write-in decision. The other was the DACA decision, which came out as we're taping this within the last 48 to 72 hours. DACA decision was Chief Justice Roberts siding with what are commonly called the four liberals in a 5-4 decision, saying that, and a pretty narrow reading of it, saying that you can't just revoke based on an administrative procedure. Trump then, at least in the legal world, famously tweets something to the effect, do you get the impression the Supreme Court doesn't like me, which cracks me up. No, it's not. They're not there going, we're going to stick it to them. Although there probably is an argument that Chief Justice Roberts is not a fan of the way that he attacks the judiciary, Trump, or the way that he tries to minimize and make them into kind of lackeys. I mean, the Supreme Court, to my mind, as much as you can vehemently disagree with them on various decisions, once judges have a lifetime tenure, they tend to try, my experience at least, they tend to try and do the right thing. And so
the fear was that Trump's going to stack the Supreme Court with conservatives, and then every decision that comes out of the Supreme Court is going to be leaning toward conservative. This is 0-2 in this particular case.
Yeah,
right?
And by the way, you know, Harmeet, who is a good friend, as you know, friend of the show, good friend of mine, we co-counsel cases together. We were spitballing that because she and I are on opposite ends of the political spectrum, and I love her dearly. I really am a huge fan of hers and consider her a close friend. We were speculating that the 6-3 decision was to insulate them, you know, when you try and get into the nuts and bolts of it. No, I think they were trying legitimately to do what they do best. And Gorsuch, for whatever you say about him, I thought he acquitted himself as well as most or any Supreme Court justices that I ever saw during the confirmation hearings. I thought that in addition to that, that the way that Roberts has kind of evolved into somebody who wants to take incremental steps and doesn't want to make huge leaps and tries and is very protective. Part of what I think he's done is in a very politicized kind of tribal environment, he's tried mightily, I think, to steer the Supreme Court into an institutionally grounded, incremental stage. And I know he gets challenged for that. I mean, you know, in the weeds with us law geeks, you know, some people will call this the Kagan Court after Justice Kagan. Others will say that it's no longer the Roberts Court. And others will say, well, Alito this or Clarence Thomas that. You know, the part of what I think is so great about the Supreme Court as presently constituted is that you can have somebody like Gorsuch write the opinion. You can have somebody like Roberts write an opinion. And people are befuddled by it. Part of the fact that they're befuddled, I think, is part of its institutional allure, if you will.
On sort of the same subject, and maybe not from a legal standpoint, but just from a good brass tacks, horse sense, and whatever cliche standpoint, is more men, biological men, transition to becoming women and then compete and dominate in women's sports. It appears that that's going to be something that's going to continue. It's probably going to increase, and it's going to be less and less women on the podium, or biological women on the podium. And I feel like it needs to be addressed at some point. For instance, here's an interesting statistic. There are 300 at any given time. There are 300 male sprinters at the high school level that are faster than the fastest woman on the planet. I mean, the fastest Olympic 100-yard dash woman at any given time. And if you picture some of those dudes out of Florida, picture Deion Sanders at 17 and a half, you realize, oh yeah, or Herschel Walker or whoever. Like, there's no way the fastest 26-year-old woman on the planet is faster than those dudes were when they were seniors in high schools, right? And those are world-class sprinters. So how do you and now you're running into these situations where former biological men have transitioned and hold all the records in Connecticut, you know, in track. It's obviously not something we're anticipating. There needs to be something done about it, possibly a third division, maybe a male, biological female, and then a transition group to duke it out on the track. But what's your general thoughts on
that? Well, I think I never thought of it in those terms. I have been wondering what the logical consequence of is from a standpoint. You know, that was tried. I know some of the lawyers involved. The NCAA case, where can you use these guys? Can you impose rules on NCAA athletes restricting their earning capacity and things of that nature? And it's becoming apparent that the trend of the law is, no, you can't do that. So if that happens, then what is going, there will be a earth-shattering change of what happens with amateurs, so-called amateur athletes. I don't think you're going to have this kind of mentality anymore, or legality anymore, of just using these amateur athletes for instance, for a college football program to have, whether it's a basketball player, a one and done, or a college football player who generates all of the incredible money that college generates for colleges. You're going to see, I think, a sea change there as well. And how does that then impact the question you posed? Because at a certain point, why can't college athletes get paid? And why can't they get paid for the money they're generating? Well, seems to me to be kind of an antiquated system.
Well, now we're getting into a slightly deeper water, because if they're getting paid and a biological male is the sixth man on his college team, but would be a superstar on the girls' team, and they're paying, well, then maybe moving over to the girls' team is an easier way to get paid. It's
if the revenues are there, or if it's mandated that the revenues are split, you know, you could get into the Title IX arguments and things of that nature. But there is a sea change going on in college athletics and in high school athletics. Remember, much of what's been prosecuted and dealt with shoe companies dealing with high school and steering high school athletes towards colleges and things of that, it's all about money. And it's all about what ends up happening is to who's going to get the endorsements, who are you going to get? I mean, you know, the amount of money that is flowing around is astronomical. And whether you're a coach, or whether you're a high school recruit, or whether you're in the eighth grade, you look like you've got prospects to be the next LeBron or something else. There is, at a certain point, there's going to be some challenges at every single kind of crossroads. And the amount of money is just so huge that I think it's going to just completely everybody's going to have to reassess how we deal with it.
The women's 100-meter record is still held by FloJo.
Yeah, who you famously caught with the great joke in Family Guy.
God, there's a horrible joke in Family Guy. And that wasn't me. That was Norm MacDonald.
Oh, that was the Norm one?
Yeah, remember FloJo famously died at, I don't know, 41 or 39
38.
I mean, 38-year-old woman died, and there was a Family Guy. I played Death on Family Guy. And but this was the first season when Norm MacDonald played Death on the Family Guy. And there was this horrible yet funny line, which is Death showed up at Peter Griffin's sort of sidewalk, and he said, I'm Death. And Peter took off running down the sidewalk, and Death yelled, I caught FloJo. You don't think I could catch you?
Oh, my God.
I know.
Jeez, that was Norm. Yeah. Couldn't do that to me.
That was horrible. But that was Norm. I did not.
What year was that?
Apologies.
That I must have started as Death in 2001 or something.
The first season, which was I think the only one that Norm played Death, was 1999
is when he was able to do that. All right, let me hit NetSuite. America, ready to get back to work? I know we are, but what about the new economy? You need every advantage. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud-based business system. With NetSuite, You'll have visibility and control over your files and all your financials and your HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. And it's all in one place. It's all at NetSuite by Oracle. Whether you're doing millions of dollars of business or hundreds of millions of dollars in sales, whatever, you can increase it with NetSuite. They give you the visibility and control to manage every penny. Join the 20-plus thousand companies who trust NetSuite. Right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 Actions Businesses Need to Take Now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/doubt. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/doubt, netsuite.com/doubt. And Ace, I think that horrible Flojo joke might have actually been in the premiere episode ever, which is titled
Really?
Death Has a Shadow.
Really?
Really? I remember, wow. I think Jimmy played Death's dog one year. I mean, one episode. He was my dog. I will tell you guys, my book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, is available as we speak. It's up on Amazon. Bookmark us, click through, get the hardcover, and then get the audiobook, because I do a little vamping, and it's the audiobook is quite a bit different than the hardcover.
And it's a great Father's Day gift. Get it.
A great Father's Day gift, but do it now, or give Dad the Kindle or the audiobook and do it digitally. Also, July 3rd and 4th, Tempe Improv doing stand-up all over the place. I think Minneapolis got canceled because the coronavirus. We're in a weird world. The Comedy Store, the Improv, Laugh Factory, it's all shuttered. I got to get on an airplane and go to Tempe, and then I can do stand-up. It's weird. It's like, what if they said, Mark, you can't work at your law office in downtown. You have to go to Phoenix so you can work at your law office. Doesn't make sense.
Well, it's a little like that. They closed down the LA Superior Court, but I can appear in other courts that are open. So I get it. It makes no sense. It's a patchwork quilt that I don't know that I want to wrap myself up in.
All right. What do you got, Mark?
I got this weekend, and if you're in the Hamptons, want to escape New York City, go by Capri. We've also got Naya, which is the restaurant that's open there. We've got V Palm Springs, which is open this weekend. Go down there, be socially distant, yet have some fun. Casa Tropicana in San Clemente, and Tenney and Engine Company 28 are now back open.
I'll get you that K-Rock sizzle. I think you'll enjoy, Mark.
Please do. I want it.
Hmm? It's already in your inbox.
It's already in your inbox. All right, tell me what you think.
You
until next time, Adam Carolla for Mark Gerga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.